I hereby introduce to you, Mr. Michael Veazey.
Hi, welcome back to Amazing FBA, the place to be if you are on the net selling in America on Amazon, FBA, and particularly private labeling, but if you're based in the UK. Although obviously you're very welcome as well if you are an American or indeed people from listening from all around the globe. Today's a little bit of an in-between episode. It's just kind of catching some thoughts that I was having, which I think are worth sharing. The audio quality may not be that amazing. I'm just leaning over my trusty MacBook Pro here and just using literally the built-in mic. So it might be a bit dodgy. And if so, I apologize. But I just wanted to get these thoughts across to you today. So today we're going to talk about customer service and exactly why that's important and why it's also not just a problem to solve, but an opportunity, at least I think so. So the first thing is that one of those things that we all tend to avoid or dread is if we get an email from somebody, and I certainly, for example, I do a lot of teaching kids piano at the moment, which is something I would like to give up for multiple reasons in most cases, although some of them are great and talented and they work hard. They're the people I want to work with. And we all want to be with people who appreciate and love us, right? But a lot of the time, the parents will get in touch, and unfortunately, you have the parents and then the schools and then the kids. So there are lots of people that can get in touch with you, and you look at the emails, you think, oh, God, all waste of time, and you know, I don't want to touch that. I'd rather be getting on with something more productive, right? So in most of life, it's understandable that we can have that sort of feeling. And if you get deluged with emails, then you've got to get a balance between getting other projects done and checking emails. And the same is true with your Amazon business. But let's be real about this. When you're starting off, you're not going to get tons of emails a day, but you might get one or two a day, and you might get one or two one-star reviews, if you're unlucky, within the first sort of 2, 3, 4 weeks of being live. So you're not talking about a massive bulk of things to deal with. So that's the first thing. So don't panic about it. But the other instinct that we have from, you know, rejecting 100, 200 emails a day and a bunch of phone calls, whatever, is often to try and just fend people off or just kind of be worried about it or whatever. And I'm here to encourage you to say that with Amazon, my experience has been that it's extremely worthwhile getting in touch with people when they complain. So here's reasons why you might want to be delighted when you hear from one of your clients that they have sent you an email and they're complaining about your product. Sounds weird? Here's why. So the first thing you should know is that when somebody's contacting you by email, they're not out there shouting about you on Amazon and giving you negative reviews, which implies lots of stars as well. Not only that, but much harder to see, kind of impossible to monitor. They're not out there on Facebook or Twitter bitching about your company. And that's really, really important. So they're not spreading bad news. They're bringing it to you. They're giving you a chance to turn it around. Here's the second reason why you want to know. You want to hear from your customers, and actually it's a really fantastic opportunity, because most of the time you're not going to get in touch with somebody who sells a product or service that is not a big deal. I mean, we're looking at a business model where we're targeting a sales price between about $15 and $40. Most of the time that's not going to be a hugely significant purchase, although for some people, I mean, I sell products that are associated with people's professional work sometimes, and boy, they get fed up when it doesn't work. When it works, they don't think about it. And that's true for a lot of things. For example, I put my phone up. I don't phone up Apple every day and go, wow, I really, really love this iPhone. Thank you so much for creating iOS 9. It looks really kind of cute font, and it does other random stuff that I never asked you to do. I mean, I'll tend to get hold of Apple support, as I did the other day, for example, because my iCloud connection isn't working. If you're not an Apple person, then iCloud's one of those things, a bit like Dropbox or Google Documents, whatever, where you can synchronize devices together. Anyway, the point is that you get in touch with people because there's a problem. But that's a great opportunity. You see, I was very impressed, for example, with the Apple support person, because I had a problem. They solved it. And not only that, they were very courteous and calm, even though I wasn't particularly, because I wanted to get stuff done and I had to dash out of the door and get other things done, right? And also the way they did it was, you know, the technology they used was good. They did a little screen share, which I thought was kind of neat. And they just dealt with it deftly, politely, efficiently, and they got the job done. So now I feel more warmly about Apple than I possibly would have done if I'd had no problems at all and not had to deal with them. I mean, obviously, nobody really wants problems, but certainly that's kind of reconnected me to Apple as a brand and as a company and their approach to doing things, the sort of high quality that I associate with them. Right now, if your customer phones you up, therefore, the only reason people are normally going to phone you up is because they've got a problem rather than because they're delighted. But if you think of it from your own perspective, that's just normal. There's not actually a big deal, okay? Now, The point is, though, they have got in touch with you. Normally, you have no kind of connection to a company and no kind of personal thing. But now they've got in touch, you have a chance to create a personal connection, right? And this is a one little tip, but very big thing, really. When you are dealing with suppliers, you want to seem like a big company. You might want to have several different email addresses. You might want to invoke some business partner, even if they don't exist, in some email somewhere to say to the suppliers, well, I've got to negotiate with other people. There's a hierarchy here. And the Chinese are very into the hierarchical thinking. Well, when it comes to your customers, you really want to come across as a small, intimate, family-run business, or, you know, a single person fighting pluckily to, you know, create fantastic products in the face of the, you know, big faceless corporations. So it's really important that you have that opportunity to be that person to somebody. So when they've called up, you have that opportunity to say, I'm really, really sorry. And genuine apologies, without defensiveness, without rubbish, without anything added, are a very strong and powerful way of building rapport with the person. So that's actually a great opportunity to build a rapport, to say, really sorry, we messed up. Our product let you down when it was very important to you. And I'm genuinely sorry. And by the way, I am genuinely sorry. I'm a person that uses one of my products and I use other people's products. And if they'd let me down in a professional situation, I would have been very upset. So I completely genuinely mean it. I don't want to produce anything that is going to do that to somebody. And I'm genuinely am sorry. So yeah, the next thing I would say is, okay, so let's solve the problem. So I'll replace it or refund it, possibly do both. I'll move quickly. One thing I think is really quite impressive, if you get hold of somebody and tell them you've got a problem, I'm thinking from the customer's perspective, and they come back to you and say, right, I've solved the problem, here's how I did it, then you don't have the usual sort of thing where you have the expectation these days, like if you try and ever claim on insurance that they're going to come back to you and quibble and go back and forth before they eventually reluctantly let go of their money. If you do the opposite and say, you know what, I'm really sorry, you know, you get an email from somebody saying the XYZ product was defective, now what are you going to do about it, or I'm really, or do I need to send it back, or I'm really unhappy, whatever it is they say, just write back, apologize fully and properly, then say, I've given you a refund through our system. If you would like me to send you a replacement product, please let me know and I'll do that straight away. Or you could even just send the replacement and the refund. So I was offering a double guarantee at that point, which meant that if there was a defect, not only would they get a refund, they get a replacement as well. So Amazon offers them one or the other. Normally I just offered both. Now that does get expensive if you have quite a high defect rate. So you only want to be doing that when you've got, you know, I'd say less than 2% defect rate. You probably should be aiming for under one anyway. Amazon basically requires that. And don't forget, defect includes things where the product is perfectly serviceable. It's just not quite what the customer wanted, or even that the customer just didn't understand what they were getting. Now, look, you could say that the customer should understand what they're doing. Caveat emptor and all that, you know, buyer beware. But, you know, sometimes people don't. So treat them well. Treat them how you'd want to be treated. Now, there's another whole thing behind this. So you've created rapport with somebody. They're more likely than somebody who's never felt strongly about your product either way. Here's my experience, by the way. This is not some theory I've been reading about. My experience, they're more likely to leave a 5-star review having left a 1-star review or complained than somebody who just bought the product and had no problems. You know, at least as far as I can judge. I mean, if somebody's bought a bunch of products and had no problems, and obviously I don't hear from them, so I don't really generally know, but I've got my statistics. Most people who leave reviews for me, either it's because I paid them, and I haven't paid them for a review, or to be clear, I've offered them a product for a massive discount, so for $2. So effectively, I've not paid them, but I paid for the chance to get a review. And then if most of them leave a review, then hopefully it's an unbiased review, but still, they're mostly being paid for effectively as far as the cash flow for the business goes. And then the other people who get in touch and leave reviews are those who've actually had a big problem and I've turned it around. Interesting. What I need to work on, and a lot of this is true as well, is to get more organic reviews, which are a percentage of the reviews, but they're not as high as I'd like them to be. I mean, they're probably around 4% or 5%. I'm not even sure, which is in itself something I need to look at. But the point I'm making here is that any way in which you can touch or reach or let alone bond with your customers is a very, very powerful and important thing, which really touches on something bigger than mere customer service, which is your whole relationship with your customers and your customers' relationship with you and your brand. And a brand is one of those words. Now, this is something else I'd like to talk about, which grows out of this, but it's a bigger picture marketing thing. Branding is really a huge, massively significant psychological slash marketing thing. In some ways, I've seen people talk about Topher Morrison, who's an NLP coach based in Florida, Tampa, Florida, who used to talk about branding as being actually part of everything that you do, and then marketing is a subset of branding and sales is a subset of marketing. So in other words, whenever you're talking about your product, whenever somebody's buying your product, you're branding, you're creating, or you are part of the process of creating a view of your product, a feeling about your product, an overall associations with your product or with your company or with you personally, or probably all three. Now, this is a very interesting thing because branding also tends to mean to a lot of people a logo or packaging. You know, logo and packaging are part of trying to create a certain feeling about your product or service with your customers or your prospective customers. But here's a deeper and bigger thing. I think brand, in the broader sense, goes back to things like reputation, which is a kind of how people speak about you. You know, do people talk about you to their friends and say that this is a good company, or do they say it was a bit dodgy, made in China, don't bother with them? So that's one thing. But the bigger thing than that is not just their conscious thoughts about it, but their unconscious associations. If you take Nike, for example, a big brand that has spent crazy amounts of money, I don't know, but very large amounts of money over the decades on creating their brand, I would personally say I have three associations. First of all, what is it they do? Well, they do running shoes, right? Which is a different thing again, which I would say is positioning rather than branding. Meaning, if I hear the word Nike, I think of running shoes. If you say the words running shoes to me, I would also think of Nike, which is even more powerful because they've now taken over the position in my mind of the word running shoes is equated with their product, Nike. I can think of other things like if I said vacuum cleaner, I would say Hoover because Hoover invented the vacuum cleaner. And for our American friends, Hoover in the UK is synonymous with, it's another word for vacuum cleaner. Okay, so because they invented the machine and everyone associates it with it, you know, you can say, I'm going to Hoover the front room. You don't say, I'm going to vacuum the front room. Oh, what are you going to use? Or it's a Hoover or it's a Dyson, whatever. So that's another thing again. Okay, so that's the whole bigger than branding yet is positioning. So in other words, you think of XYZ product and your product or your brand comes up first in people's minds, right? So that's a real achievement. When you first start off on Amazon, though, that will not be the case. People will not be searching for, you know, running shoes because they thought of Joe Blogg's running company, okay? But you are beginning the process of the other way around, which is you're creating a brand. In other words, people have associations with your brand. Now, associations includes negative ones that you don't want and conscious and unconscious things as well. So, for example, Nike makes a big point of employing very elite athletes in their adverts. So you associate them with elite athletes and runners particularly, which I would do. If you said Nike to me, I'd get a vision of some probably American sprinter, you know, glistening with muscles, warming up by the track. I'd also have images as well of the Nike swoosh, so that sort of little logo, which is important in their case. In some cases, though, it's overrated. Don't get obsessed with your own logo because nobody knows it yet. What else would I associate with Nike? Well, I'd associate it with people on street corners wearing tracksuits and running shoes, having no intention of running anywhere. So it's a kind of streetwear. Now, for me personally, that isn't a style that I particularly like. For other people, that might be very, very cool and down with the kids, and I have no idea. But the point is there are multiple associations with something. That's the biggest thing of brand, I would say, that you can really take off as the big picture. So your chance, coming back to customer service, but this is a broader thing, is again, is thinking about how your customer wants to feel about you, and your chance to influence them is fantastic when you have a customer service contact. Other things, by the way, let's broaden this discussion then. So we talked about customer service to the nth degree. It's incredibly important. If anyone leaves a review on your product listing, then if you have a negative review, it's very important to go in and to say, look, I'm very, very sorry, to give the signal that you're, you know, that the customer is your top priority, and that, you know, without them you wouldn't have a business, which by the way is true, and they should be your top priority and you wouldn't have a business. They're the ones who bring money in. Even Amazon doesn't actually put money in your pocket. It exposes you to potential customers, but then it takes money off you every time you make a sale or do fulfillment. So Amazon is part of the picture, but the ultimate people are, you know, the customers. So let's talk a bit broader about that, and then more broadly. I mean, so reviews is one place. You can actually respond to positive reviews and do all sorts of things like put lots of keywords in, which I've been very lazy about going forward. That's one of the things on my list to do, is to go through all my positive reviews for existing products and to comment on them and to, you know, to give people an encouragement to leave more reviews because it seems that somebody actually cares. There's an old management maxim which Peter Drucker was very big on. What gets measured gets done. But also I think just generally what you pay attention to gets done more. There's a very interesting bit of psychology around this, for example, with animal training, which is simply the act of paying attention to an activity. Apparently, I'm no expert animal trainer, but apparently this simply tends to encourage the activity. And here's the interesting thing, whether the reaction is positive or negative. Okay, so one of the things that I've read about that psychology is that if you want an activity to die, if you want a behavior to die off, you simply starve it of attention. You give it no attention whatsoever. Now, I don't raise 2-year-olds, nor do I look after dogs or train dogs or something like that. But it's a very interesting thing. So that if you have a behavior you want to encourage, you really should be responding to it as much as you can. Now, another thing you might want to be thinking about doing is putting inserts into your product's packaging. Now, this doesn't seem like customer service. Well, it's all part of the bigger picture of connecting with customers, which is the whole kind of theme of today. It sort of grew out of the customer service thought, but really it's more about brand and just the whole relationship with your customers, really. And I think this is a subtle and yet really, really important thing to be grasping. Amazon's about products, but business is mostly about people. So people produce prosperity, not products. Products don't produce prosperity. Products cost you money up front. And then if people, not products, but people like products, then they buy the products. Yes, they buy them via Amazon. But again, Amazon doesn't make you money. Amazon puts you in front of a bunch of potential customers, which is really powerful. They have their credit card details online. They have a strong brand. They have a connection to their customers. That's great. But then actually they charge you money every time you make a sale, and they charge you money every time they fulfill a product. And I have no issue with that, but let's just be clear-minded that the customers are not some afterthought or a pain in the bum. They are the only thing that makes you money. They're the only thing that brings money into your business. Everything else takes money out of your business. So you've got to treat them well, but it's more than that. You've got to create that rapport with them, that connection with them. Now, talking about Amazon takes money away from you rather than giving it to you, really what you want to be doing ultimately in any business is creating a really strong relationship with your customers directly as possible. You want to be building lists of customers, whether that's on an email list, which is the traditional way. And by the way, email is not dead. How many people on this podcast check their email today at least once? I bet it's everybody, pretty much 95% anyway. And if you didn't, good for you, but you're going to check it tomorrow. Everyone checks email. Email is powerful. Yeah, we have spam filters. We get too much spam. We get too many marketing messages. But it's still very powerful. Now, another place you can build a list of sorts is on Facebook, although again, like Amazon, you're depending on somebody else's platform, and there are various other things you can have, like Twitter followers, etc. Again, that's on somebody else's platform, so I would always go for email as the preference. But the point I'm making is that in any way you can, to connect with your customers is a very powerful thing. Simple tip I was going to give about email marketing is simply to put an insert inside your packaging. Amazon isn't allowed to open your packaging now. Whether that's true or not, I'm not sure, but I think most people seem to be doing it. And if you do it in this way, it's quite legitimate, which is to say something like, if you want to activate your warranty, by the way, give a lifetime warranty because you would replace it anyway. So be good to your customers. But tell them that you're going to be good to them. You know, give a lifetime warranty or guarantee, whichever one you want to call it. Get them to go to your website, www.yourbusiness.com/warranty, whatever. Put a little insert with your product inside the packaging and people will sign up for it. So far, I've only had that in products. I'm just trying to think how long that's been for, a month or two. And I've had moderate sales in that time. I don't know exactly how many units, but a few hundred. It's been quite slow over the summer. And I've already had about 32 signups. So I don't know what percentage that is. Something like 5%, something like that of sales. I need to look into that and I'll let you know. But that's beginning to build a list, which I now own. There's not an asset that Amazon has. It's not dependent on Facebook and Facebook changing their terms of service or anything else like that. I own that list. And it's on AWeber, and okay, AWeber can have a sort of throw their toys out of the pram about me and my account and me and my company if they want, but I have that email list, and that is potentially very valuable. Now, the email list is only valuable insofar as it's a list of people who actually have, A, an interest in your product, B, have bought them. In this case, we've actually got real live buyers, which is very, very much more valuable than prospective buyers, and it's infinitely more valuable than suspects, i.e. people you think might be interested in your product or service. But it's still only as valuable as the relationship you have with the customers. So really what I suppose I'm talking about in this whole sort of in-betweeny podcast is just really your relationship with your customers and your customers' relationship with you and your products. The final thing I want to say is this, that going forward, I'm going to be beginning to look into, apart from trying to set up my own little e-commerce store on my website for my company, that's going to produce a possibility of directly selling to customers. And again, getting a closer rapport and a closer link with my customers, apart from thing, getting their credit card details so that, you know, that I can go back to them and try and sell them more things. But then broader than that, I think the whole product-based business, like Amazon, it's getting more and more competitive. I still think there's massive opportunity. And certainly, unlike other things where you sort of put a message out there for months and you get crickets, you get nothing going on, or you offer something for sale and you get three sales and you haven't got enough sales momentum and data to really make any decisions that are meaningful. I mean, Amazon does sell things, and that's an extraordinary powerful thing. So it is a very powerful way of starting a product-based business. However, Amazing Selling Machine themselves now, who are like the people who are probably more than anyone responsible, Jason Katzenbach and Matt Clark, responsible for getting everybody into FBA and private labeling and all that stuff, me included, by the way. They are also starting to say now, eventually you want to build a business such that it doesn't depend on about more than 20% of its sales coming from Amazon. So you want to be looking at broader sales channels, but that's a different conversation again. But what I'd like to say today in terms of relationship with customers is ultimately what you should be selling is not what products you can find that you think are selling well. It's what your particular marketplace wants. Or to put it another way, I think Seth Godin said this, but multiple people say this in different ways. Instead of looking for more customers for your products, you should be looking for more products for your customers. And if your customers need services or sort of educational digital type products rather than physical products, then I don't see why you shouldn't expand your business to include that as well. Whether you use Amazon as a sales channel, because obviously the classic and the most ancient digital product of all, or information product of all, I should say, is a book. And Amazon started off selling books, interestingly. And I think that's something that I might look into doing going forward, but also educational products of all kinds. And that could be DVDs or something that you sell on Amazon, but it could also be online training courses, which obviously a lot of us on this podcast will have experienced when we've trained for, Amazon selling with, say, Amazing Selling Machine or something like that. So the proof is already there. We've bought these things. So your clients, your customers on Amazon might also eventually be people who will buy these digital or informational type products as well. Only a certain percentage, but then only a certain percentage of anybody is going to do anything. But you don't necessarily need a vast number of people if you're selling your own informational products where the profit margin is nearly 100% to begin to make some good money. Now, at the moment, this is all theory for me, the expanding my Amazon customers into a broader sort of sales of services and not just product-based. But that is something that I'm going to be actively looking to push as a strategic direction over the next 12 to 24 months. So watch this space. Okay, guys, I hope this was an interesting and thought-provoking episode. I'm sorry it wasn't as structured as other things, but as I said, it's supposed to be a sort of in-between episode. I'm just going to call it the same numbering system as anything else. So this is episode 14. I'll make some show notes at the usual place, amazingfba.com/14. That's always where you'll find the show notes. So I simply use the numbering of the episode as the number on the blog for the show notes. So the post is going to be amazingfba.com/number of podcast, in this case, 14. As ever, talking of building a connection to your customers, not that your customers, because you're not paying anything and you never will for the podcast or for the Facebook group, then do sign up for the Facebook group if you want to come and interact more strongly with me or the other people that are working with me, amazingfba.com/F as in Frank, B for Bertie, or just look for Amazing FBA on Facebook. There's also a page where you will get sort of more public sort of things like, you know, little bits of sharing and There's not a huge amount of value in the page if you're already really connected with the podcast, but do go to the page and give it a like. That's lovely. More significantly, do subscribe to the podcast on iTunes so that you don't miss episodes. And I'd absolutely love it if you could do a review on iTunes. We've got 2 days left, guys, on the iTunes review contest, which means that on Sunday the 27th, out of the first 25 people who have left a review, I'll be picking the names out of the hat, and a £50 Amazon voucher will be winging its way to that person. Obviously, if the person concerned is in the US, then I'll make it dollars. If you're sort of in another country, then I'll figure that out. Anyway, so I do know that we have quite a lot of international listeners. I know that the split of the listeners is kind of 50-50 between UK and USA, but there's quite a few other people from all sorts of different places. For some reason, loads of listeners in California. Maybe that's because California has a huge population, but hey there, California, if you're listening, you know, let me come and stay in your lovely sun-kissed country sometime. It's not very warm here in the UK, although the sun is shining, I have to say. It's looking beautiful, so I might actually get myself out of the house for a run before getting back to the computer. It's the danger of being an online entrepreneur. So guys, get in touch. Any questions you got, amazingfba.com/ask. Any responses to this podcast, then please go to the blog, and I'd love to hear your comments, amazingfba.com/14. Other than that, I will look forward to hearing your comments, your questions, and anything I can do for you.